It's a special Lighthouse Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Stephanie Lecce. With their powerful lights penetrating the night and fog, lighthouses were seen as shining beacons of hope to those on the water. But they also had some dark histories, as not even in the days of electricity could lighthouses always match coastline fog and rough waters. Wisconsin novelist Kathleen Ernst taps into the sometimes tragic history of lighthouses and the damp ambiance in which they stand in her latest mystery novel, The Lightkeeper's Legacy. It's the third installment of the Chloe Ellefson mysteries, which follow a curator and interpreter at Old World Wisconsin as she solves mysteries of the past and present. Ernst joins me in the studio to talk about this latest tale. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, where do we find Chloe at the start of this book?
Well, Chloe is heading up to Rock Island State Park, which is off the tip of Door County, and she's about to begin a consulting job at the oldest light station in Wisconsin, Pottawatomie Lighthouse on Rock Island.
Now, in the past two books, Chloe's efforts and mystery-solving prowess has pretty much centered around Old World Wisconsin. Why change the venue in this story?
Well, I think there's a lot to be gained from having Chloe get out and about a little bit as the series progresses. There are many wonderful places that I would like Chloe to explore and therefore give readers the opportunity to explore as well. And Rock Island State Park and Pottawatomie Lighthouse in particular are real treasures for our state. And I wanted to shine a little lantern light on that.
I'm assuming you already had a particular interest in studying this location before you wrote the book.
Well, my husband and I have had the great pleasure and privilege of serving as live-in docents at Pottawatomie Lighthouse. There is an education program that is coordinated by the civilian group that helped restore the lighthouse, the Friends of Rock Island. And my husband Scott and I go every year. We spend a week living in the lighthouse, giving tours by day, and soaking up the wonderful ambiance and history by night. So I had not been there very long on my first visit when I knew that I wanted Chloe to get to the lighthouse.
Well, what attracted you to this lighthouse? What about the history made you want to include this particular lighthouse in this story?
Well, this lighthouse was really tailor-made for a mystery writer. First of all, the lighthouse itself is spectacular. It's beautiful, huge, sitting on a limestone bluff above Lake Michigan. It was built in 1858. So the setting is gorgeous. Second, the human history there is very compelling. Lots of adventure, lots of stories about the lighthouse keepers and their families who live there. And I wanted to explore that a little bit. I also think that lighthouses in a very broad terms are very compelling. Lots of people enjoy visiting lighthouses, and I think the whole notion of a light shining in the darkness adds a nice layer to reading about a lighthouse on several different levels. And I hope that I would be able to introduce the lighthouse to some visitors who perhaps have never gone that far in Door County.
Now, once Chloe is up on Rock Island and she is at the lighthouse, she begins to learn more about the people who lived there, the lightkeepers and their wives, who in a couple of cases were actually assistant lightkeepers.
That's right. We know of at least two women who were hired and officially on the roster to be the lighthouse keeper, the assistant keeper in both cases. And when Chloe arrives, her job is to learn as much as she can about the lighthouse. She's helping as a consultant with the restoration work. So, of course, she needs to dig into the history of the families living there. And there are many wonderful and compelling stories there. But she becomes particularly interested with one woman. Her name is Emily Betts. Emily Betts was a real woman. She was an assistant lightkeeper. She had grown up on light stations. Her parents were keepers. So she knew the life very well. And Chloe begins to get fascinated with discovering Emily's story, and she also starts learning about the lives of people who lived in a fishing village at the time on Rock Island. And as she gets pulled into modern events, she finds a body on the beach as soon as she arrives, which not the way she wanted to start her vacation. She starts to wonder if past events might be affecting a present-day murder on the island.
What's interesting is as Chloe is doing her historical research, as well as looking into this unfortunate dead body that has shown up, she finds herself immersed in centuries-old debates about conservation, fishing rights, and whether lands should be kept open to the public, what should be preserved. Why did you want to include these issues? I mean, how important are these issues to you?
Well, they are very important to me. As a Wisconsin citizen, I really treasure our state park system. I treasure our Great Lakes and want them and the resources to be protected, as I think most of us do. We may have different ideas about how to go about that. And what I find fascinating is that people might think that controversy about fishing rights and the health of our lakes is a fairly modern phenomena, and it, as you said, it really isn't. And I enjoy finding things in the historical records that still resonate today, and that helps me shape a plot, but I also just think it's a fascinating thing to explore.
What were some of the issues at hand for this fishing village that did exist for so long on Rock Island?
Well, when the first white people started arriving to do some fishing seasonally, they were basically looking to make as much money as they could as commercial fishermen during the summer, and then perhaps they went off back to their farms or other businesses. Some of them were immigrants just trying to get their feet on the ground. And so we very quickly have a conflict between people whose goal is to catch as many fish as fast as possible and people who do want to earn a living but recognize that the health of the lake and the health of the fish populations have to be part of that mix. And I was surprised to learn how far back some real controversies went, certainly well back into the last couple of centuries. And that happened to mirror quite nicely with Chloe, because her books are set in the early 1980s, and the early 1980s were a period of particular stress on the Great Lakes and Lake Michigan in particular, as some fishing regulations were changed. There was some very deep tension and a lot of animosity. So all of those things swirling together made wonderful material for a book that is, the structure is dependent on the past as well as the present.
I was particularly interested in what Chloe learns about how the lightkeepers and their families actually lived. They worked incredibly hard.
They did. I'm sort of in awe. The more I learn about them, the more respect I have for them. And the Betts family was there during a particularly interesting time period. For one thing, they're up on a bluff, and a cistern system failed during their tenure there. And for reasons that aren't quite clear, the lighthouse service just took their sweet time getting around putting a pump in, as in over a couple of decades. So imagine yourself as caretakers of a huge lighthouse, lots of kids, a big garden, Mr. Betts raised horses, probably a cow. Every drop of water that was needed for tending the light, for watering the garden, for cooking, for bathing, had to be carried up from the lake. That was a huge, huge problem for the Betts family. And then in addition, the technology of the light was evolving. And during much of the Betts family time there, the fuel that was used to keep the light going was actually lard. And as you can imagine, lard was a very difficult and challenging fuel to keep a light going. When Emily was interviewed very late in life, one of the first stories that she told was about all the cold winter nights when she and her husband carried basins of hot lard up the steps to the lighthouse over and over and over because the lard would congeal. Finally, the light service moved on to a more efficient fuel, which was something to celebrate. But they also decided then that, oh, gee, we don't really need two keepers at Pottawatomie Lighthouse. So Emily was actually out of a job, and that was a real blow for the family financially. And, of course, she continued to help out and to do the work as long as the family stayed there. So they had all kinds of challenges, and yet they are remembered as being wonderful members of the community. They were people that the local citizens turned to for help. Emily was known as a healer. She helped deliver many babies on the island. And I was fascinated by this family that had many challenges and yet remain really revered in the area.
I would imagine, too, some of that respect probably came from the fact that the lighthouse itself was so important for the fishermen
Yes.
who lived there.
It was. And I think people forget the lighthouse was funded and built by the national government to supply business owners and their ships. But certainly it was a wonderful boon for the fishing families. And if a lightkeeper saw a fishing boat head out and the weather changed, they would certainly keep an eye on the channel and make sure.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Emily Betts
did help to deliver many babies on the island. And of course, that becomes a key plot point in her relationship with a woman named Reina.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about her and her family.
Well, I wanted to develop a plot around a woman who was living in the fishing village. And unfortunately, I did not find the wonderful material to focus on a real woman as I was able to with Emily. So I did fictionalize a Danish immigrant woman. I believe it's pronounced Rania.
Oh, excuse me.
That's quite all right. Rania Andersen. And so as I developed, there are two plot lines in the book. There's Chloe's line, and then it's braided with historical scenes that show these two women and their friendship developing. And Rania has a very hard time in the fishing village. It's a hard way of life, and she faces some tragedies. And Emily's friendship is very important to her, but Emily also is called to the village to help deliver Rania's baby.
Mm-hmm. And so for Chloe, what does it mean to her to find this story of Emily Betts and what she did at the lighthouse and all that she contributed to this whole village?
Well, Chloe is interested in telling all the stories she can find. But what's really important to Chloe, as it is for many women in the history field and certainly several decades ago, it's much harder to ferret out stories often about women, especially if in the terms of Rania, who left no written record. And in terms of Emily, there's lots of stories about Emily, but all the log entries, to the best of my knowledge, were written by her husband, even though Emily was an assistant keeper there. So Chloe is certainly very tuned in to wanting to be able to talk about not just the male head light keepers, but what life was like for the women and children who lived on the island, and especially at Pottawatomie Lighthouse.
And to pull out a little bit, get a little meta here, that seems to be your goal when you're writing the Chloe Ellefson mysteries. It's always to bring these real stories to light.
It really is. I worked in the history world in the 1980s, which is, of course, why Chloe's books are set there. That's the period I remember. And so often we know so little about women's lives, and we look for little shreds, perhaps a woven coverlet, perhaps a painted ale bowl, perhaps an apron that got handed down in the family. And as a curator, I could speculate in my mind, but I couldn't fabricate. And so often I looked at homes or I looked at artifacts and was left to wonder what woman's hands made this piece, what woman wore this faded work dress. And so I do understand that feeling as a curator. And now as a novelist, I have the great joy of being able to delve a little deeper into that. And in some cases, when I can find a wonderful story like Emily Betts, I can share her story through my books. And when I find just mist and smoke swirling over a particular period in history or a community, then I can pull together what I can find and create a fictional character like Rania Andersen.
And create that emotional attachment in your readers.
I hope so. I hope so. That's my first goal. Yes.
Why is that emotional attachment important for when you're writing? Why are you trying to inspire that in your readers?
Well, that's an excellent question. As I create characters, I try to do two things before I even get very far in the story. Characters have to be strong enough that readers will admire them and so want to go on a journey. But if a character is strong all the time and never falters, then that's actually pretty boring, and it would be difficult for us as readers to relate to that character. So it is that emotional bond, and I have to develop some type of vulnerability in all of my characters. And that's what I hope helps readers connect with them. And Chloe goes to the island. She's in need of some solace and some peace. She's trying to solve a few problems in her personal life. And I think that's something that readers can relate to. And in terms of the historical women, they too, they're both very strong in their own way, but they have their own particular vulnerabilities. And that's what draws Chloe into their stories. And I hope that's what draws readers into their stories as well.
Well, I know that you have the fourth book in the series getting ready to go to print.
That's true.
Can you give us a little preview of where we'll find Chloe next?
I can. I'm very excited about the next book. It's called The Heritage of Darkness. And for the first time, Chloe is actually crossing state lines. She's going to be visiting Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum in the northeast corner of Iowa, in Decorah, Iowa. And I want to be sure to confirm to loyal Chloe readers that I don't plan to have Chloe leave Wisconsin. She's a Wisconsin girl, and there's lots of historic sites in Wisconsin I want to explore. But in this case, Chloe and her mom, in fact, after the lighthouse adventure, and Chloe learns that complete solitude has its benefits but has its drawbacks as well, and she comes home from that adventure determined to maybe strengthen some ties in her own family. And so she suggests that she and her mom travel to the Norwegian American Museum to take a rose mulling class in December. And Relke, the cop who is a consistent character in the books, he decides that he'll come along too and take a carving class at the same time. And of course, because this is a murder mystery, all of their hopes for a good time, a relaxing time, some family bonding, that all goes awry very quickly. But it's a fun story. It let me delve into some wonderful aspects of holiday traditions. Since the book is set in December, a lot of the traditions that we think of now as very cozy, fun, warm, family times, Christian roots, actually, if we go back centuries, some of them had very pagan roots, some of these customs and traditions. And people responded in different ways to what were the shortest and darkest days in the year, which was wonderful material for a mystery writer to think about. So I had a great time writing that book. I think readers will enjoy it.
Boy, it turns the boyfriend meets the mother story on its head.
Exactly. It really does.
Well, Kathleen Ernst, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about The Lightkeeper's Legacy and giving us a preview of the next story.
My great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Kathleen Ernst is the author of The Lightkeeper's Legacy, the third book in the Chloe Ellefson mystery series. The fourth book, Heritage of Darkness, will be published in October. Ernst has also written dozens of other historical novels for children and young adults. She lives in Middleton. And that's all the time we have today. I'm Stephanie Lecce. I hope you'll join us again tomorrow morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.